Lean forward. "Proceed with laser radar mapper scan," he said. "Circular scan from subsurface point out to 5 kilometers radius." Caesar watched as the screen blanked and the image of Dragon's Egg appeared on the screen. He then saw a track of tiny little circles, each one representing a spot where the laser radar had reflected its beam off the crust of the neutron star, slowly winding its way outward in an ever-expanding spiral. "This spiral scan will take about 8 minutes," he murmured to himself. He watched for a few seconds, and then his fingers flickered over the keyboard as he moved on to set up the next experiment. Time, 6:39:55 GMT, Monday, 20 June, 2050. "I don't want to complain, but I don't want him around," the clan astrologer complained to Sharpslicer. "When you first sent Pink Eyes to apprentice with me, I was willing to give him a try, even if he does look strange. He was eager and tried very hard. But when we found out that his eyes are so poor that bright and the eyes are only blurs, and that he cannot even see most of the other stars in the sky, it was obvious that he could never be an astrologer. If you cannot see the stars, then how can you make astrological predictions?" "Despite that," the clan astrologer went on, "I did find him useful in helping me with the worship services. His voice is high, but the ripples carry well. I use him for all the chants and have him take care of the worship symbols. But now I am afraid that I will have to get rid of him. He's blasphemous."
"What?" exclaimed Sharpslicer.
"Yes," the clan astrologer said. "For a long time as an apprentice, he kept saying that the inner eye of Bright was flashing on and off. We finally convinced him that it was just his poor eyesight tricking him. But recently he has been saying that every dozen turns or so, the flashes get brighter and brighter, and then fade away again. The last time occurred a few turns ago. He even dragged me up to the top of his silly hill and kept saying to me, 'Look at them! Look at those brilliant flashes! Are you blind, old one?' I don't mind being called an old one, for it is not long before I will get to play with the hatchlings," the clan astrologer went on. "But to be called blind by that nearly sightless freak is more than I can stand. Besides, he is going around telling everyone that Bright's inner eye is signaling to him. Him alone." Sharpslicer looked at the 7 points of light hanging nearly motionless over the east pole. She did not often look at the sky, as she was too preoccupied with running the clan here on the crust. However, if there had been bright flashes from the inner eye, she certainly would have noticed them. She normally did not pay much attention to religion, but, as leader of the clan, she was automatically chief worshipper of Bright at holy times, and it wouldn't do to let things be disrupted by an obviously deranged individual.
"I guess the Bright's afflicted has other problems besides paleness and poor eyesight," she said. "However, times are good, so we will just let him get by without having to do any work."
Pink Eyes was not happy with his new status. He felt worthless and spent most of his time off away from the clan camp, gazing at the blurry shapes of Bright and the eyes, talking to the spots of light and himself, and dreaming that he was leader of the combined clans, speaking to the multitudes that gathered around him to hear his words of wisdom. Time, 6:40:35 GMT, Monday, 20 June, 2050. The console screen flashed, and Caesar looked up. Across the top of the screen appeared the words, "Laser radar mapper scan complete." Caesar struck a few keys, and the IR image that he had been examining disappeared and was replaced with a command setup for the laser radar mapping experiment. For the next segment of the scan, the laser beam would be shooting obliquely across the curved surface of Dragon's Egg, and the equipment could now obtain both high-resolution height and surface position information, if it were set up to use a chirped pulse. Soon, the laser was chirping in frequency from the visible up to the ultraviolet region, while the pulse repetition rate was lowered to 100,000 pulses per second. Caesar set up the laser mapper to scan a 1 radian sector, starting from the edge of the 5-kilometer circle that he had already mapped and extending out for another 5 kilometers, well over the curve of Dragon's Egg. He then watched as the sector scan started, the narrow fan beam taking about 1 second per sweep as it slowly crept outward toward the west. Time, 6:40 and 46 seconds GMT, Monday, 20 June, 2050. Pink Eyes made his way up the slight rise just outside the clan camp. He had been so sure that Bright had been talking to him through Bright's inner eye, but no one would believe him.
"Yet it was so bright," Pink Eyes said to himself. "Such dazzling, brilliant flashes of pure light. It was Bright incarnate. Yet Bright would not let them see. Why? Why? Why?"
Pink Eyes rested once again on the low rise. Using the prayers and chants that he had so faithfully rippled into the crust every worship time, he again sought comfort from one who seemed to have inflicted nearly every indignity upon him, except death. Pink Eyes felt his small, sharp knife in his personal weapons pouch, and drew it out. He looked at it for a long while, considering. He dropped the knife to the crust where it lay, its tiny point shattered by the fall. Pink Eyes knew that his clan would not allow him to starve, even though they refused to let him share in the work, but he resolved never to return. Without looking back, he set forth toward the east, directly into the wilderness, the territory of the barbarians. The sentry guards, used to the wanderings of this strange, pale one of the clan, let him pass outward without challenge. Pink Eyes had no plan. Having been rejected by the clan, his only thought was to leave. He knew he was in danger from the barbarians, but the thought of meeting death at the points of their spears held no terror for him. He traveled onward, drawn toward the pattern of lights over the east pole that slowly rotated once a turn. Pink Eyes found some partially ripe pods on an isolated wild plant and was slowly savoring the first food he had had in many turns when he stopped, struck with awe. The inner eye had sent out a brilliant, long-lasting, multicolored beam of light down ahead of him. The beam was unlike the others that he had seen previously. Those had been short flashes of light, so fast and so intense that there was no color to them. These were like silent words of rolling crustquakes. They started in the deep red and slowly, taking their time, swept through strange colors into a radiating brilliance. Pink Eyes waited, and shortly was rewarded by another dazzling display. As if in a trance, he put the pods into a storage pouch and moved off toward the beam of light. It came again, and again, and soon he began to depend upon its regularity. As Pink Eyes moved forward to intercept the beam, he noticed that it was slowly moving off to the north. A short while later, he saw that it had stopped its northward movement. It now seemed to be coming closer and closer with every lengthy blink. He moved to intercept its southward path
and finally stopped and waited for it to come to him. As the turn passed, he watched the brilliant multicolored display get brighter and brighter. Then suddenly, it was on him. His eyes ducked reflexively under their flaps while the crust around him sparkled with multicolored glints. But the strangest feeling of all was the warmth on his topside. It tingled and felt good. So good it was like having sex with a god. Pink eyes writhed in pleasure under the beaming ray, his pale body automatically thinning out to absorb the delightful feeling. Then, almost as suddenly as it had come, the feeling stopped. Bewildered, Pink Eyes drew himself into shape and waited. A short while later, the beam came down again, this time off to the south. His eyes could now stand the glare, while his topside only felt a slight tingle of the intense feeling that it had experienced just a few moments ago. Pink Eyes tried to keep up, but the blinking light moved too rapidly for him and left him behind in its progress across the crust. Pink Eyes waited, his eyes gazing upward as the beautiful beam slowly blinked its way southward. He was sure it would return, so he waited, only moving to find some food to sustain him until he saw the beam come closer again. When it finally arrived, he was ready. His small, pale body thinned out to its maximum to receive the warm caress of the light. The beam struck him, and he reveled in sexual pleasure, his tread kneading the crust in a paroxysm of prayer. "Bright! Oh, Bright! Pour down your blessing of love on me! Thank you! Oh, thank you for rewarding your faithful servant!" For dozens of turns, Pink Eyes existed in the wilderness, communing with the inner eye of Bright as its beam of love and pleasure swept by every half-dozen turns. His slow, wandering path took him steadily back toward his old clan camp as his pace over the crust matched the steady motion of the scanning beam. As Pink Eyes moved along, he became more and more convinced that he, and he alone, had been called to bring the word of Bright to the Chela. Fortified spiritually, Pink Eyes finally broke away from his addiction to the intense sexual pleasure of the beam. He now moved more swiftly and left the beam behind him. The beam was still making its north and south movement over the crust, while slowly creeping westward. Pink Eyes went directly toward the clan camp. He made his way slowly up to the top of the mound near the camp where he had previously communed with Bright. He began to preach, his high-pitched voice now strong with undoubting assurance, rippling through the crust.
"Prepare! Prepare, all people, for the blessing of Bright will soon be on you," sounded Pink Eyes' voice.
At first, only the perimeter guards came to investigate the source of the voice. When they saw who it was and heard his strange speech, they jeered and moved back to their posts. After a few guard shifts, most of the clan knew of the strange rantings of the Bright's afflicted. The news finally reached the clan astrologer, who went immediately to Sharpslicer.
"We must do something," the clan astrologer said.
Sharpslicer agreed.
"You are right. Let us go and try to get him to be sensible and stop."
Sharpslicer, the clan astrologer, and a group of warriors went out to the mound. As they approached, they could hear Pink Eyes preaching to a small group of heckling warriors and older hatchlings.
"Repent and pray," Pink Eyes was saying. "Repent, for soon the blessing of Bright will be upon you."
Sharpslicer thudded her tread against the crust.
"Pink Eyes, stop that nonsense and come down here."
"No,"
Pink Eyes said. "I now obey a higher leader than you."
Pink Eyes reached a tendril into a pouch that had been closed since he left the hatchling pens, and pulled out his clan totem.
"I am no longer of this clan," Pink Eyes said,
holding the clan totem up so that all could see. He dropped the totem, and it shattered on the crust, sending a little shockwave through the disturbed treads of all around.
"I have been called by Bright," Pink Eyes said, "to lead all the people of all the clans to greater worship of him."
"This is enough," the clan astrologer whispered to Sharpslicer. "Stop his ranting."
Sharpslicer took command of the situation, although unwillingly. It was a distasteful duty to punish someone who was obviously mentally sick. But by destroying his clan totem, Pink Eyes had lost the protection of the clan.
"Since you have destroyed your totem," Sharpslicer said in a loud voice, "you yourself have left the clan. Therefore, I command you to leave clan territory."
Her dozen eyes shifted to pick out three warriors who were nearby.
"I want you three to escort this self-proclaimed barbarian to the border. Do not let him return. If he does not leave, turn him into meat."
The three warriors moved slowly up the hill, none of them even bothering to pull a slicer or pricker from a weapons pouch, for any one of them was more than a match for the frail body of Pink Eyes.
"Halt!"
Pink Eyes said to the warriors, and they hesitated, slightly bewildered at the strange behavior. Looking north, Pink Eyes saw the beam approaching the mound. He turned all of his eyes upward toward the eyes and started to pray, ignoring the warriors.
"Oh, great Bright, show these wicked unbelievers the love that you can give to them if they become your true followers."
The warriors continued to hesitate, uneasy over interrupting a prayer, yet their treads were rippling lightly with suppressed humor. Sharpslicer was in the midst of stamping a sharp command to the hesitating warriors when suddenly she felt herself flattening in a frenzy of glowing sexual pleasure. Her eyes, writhing on extended eye stubs, could see others also flowing and thinning out around her. She felt the edge of the nearby clan astrologer flowing over one side of her, partially blocking the intense warmth. A male tread on her topside, normally a pleasurable feeling, did not feel good enough, and she contracted and withdrew herself to bask her entire topside in the more sublime pleasure that poured down from the sky. As she wiggled in enjoyment, she could hear Pink Eye's high-pitched voice coming through the crust.
"Come, all of you, receive the blessing of Bright that I bring to you."
The pleasure grew more and more intense. Then it stopped. Slowly, Sharpslicer, the clan astrologer, and the others regained their normal shape. Exhausted, they waited motionless while Pink Eyes spoke.
"I have brought you the blessing of Bright," he said. "It will be yours again if you will believe in Bright and will worship him."
"I believe," one of the warriors cried. "Bring down the blessing of Bright on me again."
"First, we must worship Bright properly," Pink Eyes said. "To do that, we must all go into the clan camp and pray. In a half dozen turns, I want all the clan to be gathered and worshiping Bright in the temple area."
Sharpslicer said nothing as the others hastened off to tell the rest of the clan about the miracle and the commands of Pink Eyes. She did not like losing authority to this pale excuse for Achila, but with Bright seeming to back him, she had little choice. 6 turns later, the whole clan was gathered in the temple area and listening to Pink Eyes as he preached. Their bodies filled the temple to overflowing.
Pink Eyes had allowed the clan astrologer to start the worship service, but he soon took over with a lengthy, hypnotic sermon. Sharp Slicer listened to the worship service from the fringes of the crowd. She had not neglected her duties as leader of the clan, despite the interruption caused by Pink Eyes. Since Pink Eyes had insisted that even the perimeter guards attend the worship services, she made sure that she and the other good warriors were on the periphery of the crowd in case of a barbarian attack. Also, despite their protests, she made the old ones stay outside the egg and hatchling pens.
"When the blessing of Bright comes on you, it will be just as if you were having sex," she tried to explain to Hard Rock, the old one in charge of the eggs. "You will lose control of your body and may damage an egg while you are thrashing around."
"What do you mean?" Hard Rock protested. "I am too old for sex. All I want to do is tend my eggs."
However, when Pink Eyes brought down the blessing of Bright on the worshipping clan, Hard Rock felt a sexual surge that was more intense than the best experience of his youth. His body thinned, and his eyes stared out from extended stems as his topside was bathed in the warming beam. Then, just at the end of the blessing, Hard Rock, his eyes gazing upward at the eyes in pleasure, saw a faint, glimmering beam of deep-colored light pouring down upon him.
"I see it! I see it!" Hard Rock shouted. "I believe! I believe!"
Hard Rock, instantly converted, left his precious eggs without another glance and moved through the recovering crowd. As he made his way, he kept repeating,
"I saw! I believe! I want to follow you, bringer of the word of Bright!"
Pink Eyes questioned Hard Rock carefully, and finally was convinced that Hard Rock had seen a dim version of the dazzling, multicolored display that was so obvious to him. When the next beam came down to the north of them, Pink Eyes had Hard Rock look up at the eyes, but the beam, not being directly on him, was just barely visible to Hard Rock. Any remaining thought that he had been imagining things left Pink Eyes completely, now that his visions of light from the eyes had been confirmed. He again turned his eyes to the crowd and spoke.
"I am Bright's chosen one," he announced. "I give you the glowing love of Bright, and I bring to you his word."
"Yes," Hard Rock broke in. "Listen to the chosen of God and obey."
Pink Eyes turned his eyes toward Hard Rock. He formed a pale tendril and curled it around one of Hard Rock's eye stubs.
"You were one of Bright's chosen ones too, Hard Rock," he said. "I want you to come with me on my mission."
"I obey God's chosen,"
Hard Rock said. And without hesitation, the hardened veteran reached into a pouch that had not been opened for 5 dozen grates of turns. He removed his clan totem, raised it high, and let it crash to the crust. Pink Eyes called Sharp Slicer to him and announced,
"I will travel to the west to bring the word of Bright to the rest of the clans. I will need food and warriors for protection."
"Yes, O God's chosen,"
Sharp Slicer said, relieved that this perplexing individual would soon leave and allow the life of the clan to resume its normal pattern.
"We will obey."
At the next turn, Pink Eyes, now reverently addressed as God's chosen, moved off to the west with a large party of followers, Hard Rock the foremost among them, and surrounded by a small contingent of worshipful warriors. Sharp Slicer had a hard time keeping more of her people from leaving. Fortunately, God's Chosen had helped by preaching that Bright wanted them to stay to take care of the eggs and hatchlings and protect Bright's empire from the barbarians. The procession moved slowly across the crust toward the next clan. A small group led by Hard Rock was sent ahead with a message that God's Chosen was coming to bring down the blessing of Bright upon them all. Although Hard Rock was well known in the next clan, it was an incredulous group that gathered around God's Chosen as he stopped at the edge of the clan compound to meet with No Fear, the leader of the clan and his clan astrologer.
"Why are you bothering our people, clanless one?" spoke No Fear sharply.
"I only wish to bring them the word and blessing of Bright, O leader of the clan," God's Chosen said politely. "I know that you have a hard time believing me, but I tell you that I am Bright's Chosen One. Believe in me, and you shall receive his blessing."
"I don't like him," the clan astrologer whispered to No Fear. "I am suspicious myself," No Fear said, "but Hard Rock has fought beside me in many battles with the barbarians, and he is not only convinced that this funny pale one tells the truth, but he insists that he can see the blessing beam himself." "I still don't like it," the clan astrologer complained again. "All he asks is to be allowed to use the temple to pray to Bright," No Fear said. "That is what the temple is for, so what harm can there be in that?"
"Yet," complained the clan astrologer, perturbed over possibly losing some of his authority in the clan, "it is the words that he will preach that bother me. He insists that he is the chosen one of Bright. That cannot be. If Bright were to choose a Chela to send his word by, it would be a strong, heroic person, not that insignificant caricature of a Chela."
"Still," No Fear protested, "he may be right, and I would not want to risk a curse from Bright for ignoring the bringer of his word."
No Fear turned his eyes toward the Pale One.
"We will let you use the clan temple, God's Chosen," said No Fear, "if you will be sure to bring down the blessing of Bright upon us."
Pink Eyes turned a few of his eyes to the south, where he saw the multicolored beam off in the distance.
"We will rest this turn," he replied. "But on the next turn, I want the entire clan in the temple, and I shall bring the blessing of Bright upon you all, for I feel that you believe."
"Well, I don't believe," whispered the clan astrologer to No Fear. "No one can order the god Bright around. If he fails in the coming turn, I want you to order the clanless one turned into meat for speaking such outrageous blasphemy."
"I had already made that decision," No Fear said quietly. "He may be able to fool his own clan, but he will not fool us."
The bringer of Bright's word was not fooling. With the next turn, the following of God's Chosen grew. On the succeeding turn, God's Chosen left the newly converted clan and a puzzled but convinced clan astrologer. The astrologer had asked for and received a special prayer that he could use, for he was going to change his temple worship services to thank Bright for having sent the bringer of the word during his lifetime. As the caravan of the followers of God's Chosen moved slowly west, bringing the blessing of Bright down upon clan after clan, the word of the strange happenings on the eastern border reached Hungry Swift, the leader of the combined clans. It sounded serious enough to cause him to investigate personally. Taking a squad of needle troopers with him, he moved quickly along the pathways of Bright's empire, his troopers clearing the often crowded way for him. Finally, Hungry Swift cautiously arranged a meeting with God's Chosen and his followers. Hungry Swift was too much of a politician to use his power ostentatiously. He left his troopers and came alone to visit with the Holy One. He had heard descriptions of the miracle worker, but still was not prepared for the tiny, pale body, and especially the pink eyes. Feeling no fear from the little one, he went forward to meet him.
"Greeting, God's chosen," he said. "I hear strange tales about your work."
"They are not tales, Hungry Swift,"
God's chosen said.
"They are the true word of Bright."
"Tell me more," Hungry Swift asked, "for what I have heard has come through many treads and has been distorted in the telling."
God's chosen had been keeping his traveling band well ahead of the sweeping beam. He found it better to keep the number of blessings to his followers down, so they would not get too used to it. Besides, if any of them ever figured out that the blessing of Bright came every half-dozen turns, whether he called for it or not, they would soon be able to receive the blessing without having the word of Bright preached to them. His practiced eyes found the beam in the north, and he gauged its motion.
"I could tell you much, Hungry Swift, but you still would find it hard to believe," God's chosen said. "Come with me for a journey alone into the wilderness. Together we will pray, and you shall have the blessing of Bright come upon you alone. Gather food for 3 turns and come with me."
"Why wait 3 turns?" Hungry Swift complained. "Why not now?"
God's chosen looked at him severely.
"Because you do not believe," he said. "And it will take 3 turns before I can get you to believe enough to receive the blessing of Bright."
Hungry Swift could only agree that God's chosen had judged the level of his disbelief correctly. He did not believe in this charlatan at all, and he doubted that 3 turns of preaching would change him a bit. However, the stories that he had heard of this strange one were not distorted, but often came from some of his best trooper commanders, who naturally had investigated anything that could perturb the security of the far-flung borders of Bright's empire. Hungry Swift hated to waste 3 turns, but if that was what it would take to clear up this mystery, he was willing to do it. If it turned out that there was no mystery, he personally would make sure that there would not be enough left of the pale body to bother collecting for the meat bins. Still, the miracle worker did seem to be very confident and unafraid.
"I will go with you, God's chosen," Hungry Swift said. "Lead the way."
The two loaded their pouches with a small amount of food, and then God's chosen took them to the northeast to meet the beams sweeping down from the north. The trooper squad leader had protested the idea of Hungry Swift traveling without protection in the wilderness between clan camps, but Hungry Swift brushed off his protests.
"We are well within the outer borders, and there are no barbarians in this region," he said. "And I hope you don't think that I can't handle that pale priest by myself. If I were just to tread on him lightly, I would burst him like an egg sack."
As they journeyed into the wilderness, God's chosen tried to preach continuously. But Hungry Swift would take the opportunity during pauses to ask personal questions about the earlier times when God's chosen had been called Pink Eyes. After hearing of what Pink Eyes had gone through as a hatchling and youngster, and about his conversion in the wilderness, Hungry Swift gained a grudging admiration for the courage that seemed to fill the tiny body. Soon, Hungry Swift stopped noticing that the personality that was God's chosen / Pink Eyes inhabited anything less than a normal body. He was continually being surprised that Pink Eyes was not of normal size, as, for example, when he had to ask for help to pick a pod high up on the side of a petal plant. As their line of travel came closer and closer to intersecting the path of the beam from the inner eye, the preaching of God's chosen became more and more intense. Hungry Swift listened intently, for he now respected God's chosen. But he had to admit that despite all the preaching, he still did not believe that his companion was Bright's chosen one, and that he could bring the blessing of Bright down upon him.
"I listen, God's chosen," Hungry Swift said, "but I still have trouble with my belief."
"Even the act of confessing your disbelief is a motion in the right direction," God's chosen said. Then, turning all of his eyes upward, and slowly counting off the moments since the previous flash of beam just to the north of him, he chanted,
"Help, O Bright! Help this unbeliever find faith! Bring down the blessing of Bright upon Hungry Swift!"
Hungry Swift's eyes followed those of God's chosen up to the strange formation of seven lights that hung overhead in the sky. He was calmly wondering how they managed to stay in one place while the rest of the stars in the sky moved from east to west, when suddenly his body seemed to explode with pleasure. For what seemed like an eternity, Hungry Swift reveled in the heaven-sent pleasure of Bright's love. His eye stubs reached out toward the eyes in an attempt to copulate with the stars. They writhed back and forth, stretching to their limit. Then suddenly they froze as they saw the beam coming down from the inner eye of Bright.
"I see! I see!" he shouted.
Then, as quickly as it had come, the warmth stopped. Hungry Swift composed himself, and self-consciously wiped the dribbles of yellow-white mating fluid from the orifice under each eye stub. As he gathered his senses, he could hear God's chosen praying.
"Thank you, O Bright, for bringing the vision as well as the blessing to the leader of the combined clans. I pray that you will guide him to lead all the clans into greater worship of you."
Completely convinced, Hungry Swift also prayed. As leader of the combined clans, he was automatically the head worshipper of Bright. However, the ritual chants that he had learned to use in the worship services now seemed completely inadequate, and he clumsily made up his own prayers.
"Lead me, O Bright," he said. "Give me your word, and I will follow it with all that I command."
"I will give you Bright's word," God's chosen said. "For too long, Bright has been neglected. Bright has been good to his people. They have grown in numbers and have prospered. What used to be a small clan gathered in the city of Bright's heaven is now many clans that are spread out over Bright's empire, so powerful that the barbarians shrink from angering them. Yet what have the ungrateful Chela done for Bright in return?"
"We worship him often," Hungry Swift protested.
"Yes, but where?" God's chosen asked. "In tiny temple areas. What Bright deserves is a temple appropriate to his greatness."
"Tell me what is needed," pleaded Hungry Swift.
"You shall build a holy temple. It shall be in the shape of Bright, in whose likeness we are but imperfect copies. The outer walls shall be a perfect circle, and a dozen grates of Chela shall be able to line up from one side of the circle to the other without crowding their edges."
Hungry Swift was appalled.
"That will be almost as big as the city of Bright's heaven."
"Yes," God's chosen went on, unperturbed, "for it must hold all who live in Bright's heaven, plus many others. At one dozen places about the circle, there shall be placed walls representing the eye stubs of a Chela at full alert. At the ends of each eye stub shall be a round mound representing the eyes. Between each pair of eye stubs, there shall be an opening in the temple walls, representing the orifices that allow things to enter and leave the inner mysteries of Bright's body. Finally, at the very center of the inner area, there shall be a circular mound representing Bright's inner eye."
"I will obey, God's chosen," Hungry Swift said. The holy temple to Bright will be built as you say.
Still dazed, Hungry Swift followed God's Chosen back to the two encampments. When the squad leader came out to greet them, it was obvious from Hungry Swift's demeanor that the leader of the combined clans had felt the blessing of Bright. He was even more awed when he learned that the leader had also seen the blessing, since very few had been allowed by Bright to receive this indication of being one of his chosen ones. The journey into the wilderness over, Hungry Swift automatically resumed command.
"Call the troopers to alert," he ordered. "We return to Bright's heaven at once, for there is much to do."
Before he left, Hungry Swift returned for one last visit to his friend and teacher.
"Are you God?"
he asked.
"No,"
God's Chosen said. "Bright is God. I am merely Bright's vehicle by which he sends his word and his blessing. You have received the word. Go and carry it out. Yours will not be an easy task, for it will take a dozen greats of turns to create a temple of that size. But do not worry about the time, for Bright is patient. I will stay here and bring the blessing of Bright to all the clans. That too will take time. But by the time you have the holy temple built, I will have brought the blessing of Bright to all here in the east, and will come to Bright's heaven to bring the blessing down on all who live there, on the holy temple itself."
"Bright, give me strength that I might live to see the time," said Hungry Swift.
"Your work will keep you strong,"
God's Chosen said.
"Now go."
At first, Hungry Swift experienced resistance to the project of building the holy temple. There were even rumors that some of the underleaders, or even one of the nearby clan leaders, might attempt a formal challenge to his leadership. Hungry Swift quickly eliminated all objections to the building of the temple by insisting that everyone with any power or authority take a journey to the east to be initiated by God's Chosen into the mysteries of the blessing of Bright. As the converts returned, the enthusiasm for the project grew. Fortunately, the barbarians were quiet during these times, and the crops grew well without excessive tending, for soon nearly one-third of the population of Bright's Heaven and surrounding areas was engaged in hauling rocks and loose crustal material to form the outline of a chela at perfect alert, with 12 round eyes perched out on extended eye stubs. The first thing built was a round mound at the center that represented the inner eye of Bright. Then, as the outline of the holy temple grew, the old worship area was abandoned and services were held inside the growing temple, with the high priest speaking from the inner eye mound. As the greats of turns passed, God's Chosen moved slowly west, pausing to make sure that each clan camp was given the blessing of Bright. As they moved nearer and nearer to Bright's heaven, the clan camps became closer and closer together. They also began to spread more widely to the north and south, because the population pressure had overcome the natural reluctance to engage in travel in the hard direction. It soon became impossible for God's Chosen to bring the blessing to each camp himself. There also came rumors of small groups of chela who had received the blessing out in the wilderness, without God's Chosen being anywhere near. God's Chosen then decided that the time had come to give to others the power to bring the blessing. Since some could see the beam if it were near, he made them his disciples. He sent them off in the hard directions, north and south, with instructions to take the word to the clans there. They were to watch the inner eye carefully, and, as the beam approached, time their worship services with the receiving of the blessing of Bright. The results were not as satisfactory as the well-preached services that God's Chosen conducted,
But more and more of the Chile in the great empire felt the miracle of the blessing of Bright. As the greats of turns passed, the holy temple neared completion. Nearly all who worked on it had taken time off now to complete a pilgrimage to the east to receive the blessing from God's chosen, and all returned to work with renewed vigor. When God's chosen reached the outskirts of the sprawling city of Bright's Heaven, he left his preaching to Hard Rock and went ahead to see the holy temple. When Hungry Swift heard of the approach of God's chosen to the city, he came out with an honor guard of troopers to greet him. As they moved along the pathway to the city, the troopers would move ahead, lining the pathway and keeping the curious multitudes from bothering God's chosen and the leader of the combined clans as they moved leisurely along, their pace limited by the small tread of God's chosen. The crowds that gathered along the pathways were well behaved. The troopers would suffer hatchlings to ooze between them, or allow an eye stub to be rested on their topsides, especially if the eye stub belonged to a nubile one of the opposite sex. The onlookers were treated to an unusual sight. A huge, battle-scarred warrior with an obvious air of command, who carried the highest rank in Bright's empire, maintaining pace and speaking deferentially to a tiny, pale, pink-eyed, clanless one. Yet the pale one had an air of assurance about him that caused the crowd to murmur as he passed. Occasional cheers radiated outward from small groups as the two made their way into the city.
"How is the holy temple proceeding?"
God's chosen asked.
"The basic foundation is done, O God's chosen," Hungry Swift said, "and the finishing work is well underway. We should have it completed well before the blessing of Bright is due to come down upon the temple grounds."
"Good," God's chosen said. "I would like to see it."
As the two took the path to the south to visit the temple, a squad of troopers formed a chevron in front of them and pushed their way into the hard direction. The two leaders moved comfortably along behind the pathbreakers. As they came closer to the holy temple, even God's chosen was impressed, for the outer walls of the temple seemed to extend almost to the horizon in both directions.
"It is a fitting monument to the honor of Bright," he said with obvious satisfaction.
"Yes," Hungry Swift said. "All of us who worked on it are extremely proud that we were allowed to contribute to such an impressive edifice. As you commanded, a dozen greats of Chila can fit between the outer walls. One of the astrologers calculated that the holy temple can hold a great of greats of greats of Chila within its walls."
"May we bring down the blessing of Bright upon them all," said God's chosen.
The two, together with their honor guard, approached the walls of the temple. They passed between two of the circular mounds that represented two of the outer eyes of Bright, and moved between the narrowing walls that represented the eye stubs until they came to a break in the wall between the two eye stubs that was one of the entrances to the inner portion of the Temple of Holies. As they passed through the temple orifice and entered the inner yard, God's chosen knew that he had been right. This was the word of Bright. Ahead, he could see the inner eye mound, but all around him was a horizon of wall that blocked off the view of the city, leading the eyes naturally upward to look at Bright toward the south, and the eyes of Bright to the east. As they entered the temple, they could see a small crowd around the base of the inner eye mound.
"We have come just at the end of a worship service," Hungry Swift said. "Bright's first, the high priest, is on the inner eye mound now. Let us go to meet him."
They made their way to the rear of the crowd around the mound
as the service ended. God's Chosen was then bewildered to see a line of Chela, each dragging a sled piled with food, slowly making its way up the mound. At the top, the supplicants left their sleds, where they were taken by apprentice astrologers, while the supplicant went up to the high priest and slowly rotated around once, while the high priest touched each eye, one after the other, murmuring as he did so.
"What is going on?"
God's Chosen asked of one of the Chela, slowly pulling his heavy burden up the slope of the mound.
"I am bringing my Duzzeth, and have come to get my blessing," the Chela said.
The tread of God's Chosen rippled sharply on the crust.
"What Duzzeth? And what blessing?"
The Chela's eye stubs wavered randomly in bewilderment, and Hungry Swift's voice broke in from the side.
"The high priest has said that those who would divide up their harvest and kill into 12 parts and give 1/12 to the keepers of the temple will receive a special blessing from Bright, given by the high priest himself. He holds a worship service every turn, and these people come from all over Bright's empire to give their Duzzeth and receive Bright's blessing."
God's Chosen was shocked. His tread exploded in a furious shout.
"No!"
he shouted, and scurried up the mound as all eyes turned toward him.
"The blessing of Bright belongs to all, and is freely given. You cannot bribe Bright with gifts."
He moved across the top of the mound to where the apprentice astrologers were taking the sleds of food. With a strength born of fury, he pushed a load of pods and meat off a sled down the slope. The pods rolled downward, gathering speed and disappearing, to reappear as they came to a stop against the shocked edges of the Chela at the bottom of the mound. God's Chosen moved back to the center of the mound and repeated in his high-pitched voice,
"I will bring you the blessing of Bright. You do not have to give a Duzzeth to receive it, but only what you wish to give."
God's Chosen turned his small pink eyes from the crowd, stared hard at the motionless high priest, and said,
"I do not want my people coerced into worshipping Bright. If the astrologers cannot live on free will offerings, let them work in the fields."
A murmur of approval started in the crowd of supplicants, and then grew to a continuous cheer as the crowd began to realize who the pale figure was and what he had been saying. As the crowd started up the mound to gather around God's Chosen, the high priest moved away down the other side, his apprentices abandoning the sleds and following after him. Later, in the astrologer's compound, the high priest was conferring with Bright Second, the chief astrologer.
"He has no idea what he is doing," Bright's First said.
"The people are behind him," Bright Second warned, "not to mention the leader of the combined clans and all of his underleaders."
"But he does not understand the importance of our work," the high priest said. "You cannot have apprentice astrologers out tending crops in the fields like common laborers. They will never learn their numbers or how to cast horoscopes with the astrologer sticks."
"You are right," Bright Second said. "He ought to be dealt with in some way. He is disrupting the important duties of the people that work in God's service."
"Unfortunately," Bright's First said, "only Hungry Swift, the leader of the combined clans, has the authority to do anything about this rabble-rouser, and he is under his spell."
The chief astrologer hesitated, then said,
"His blessing is a powerful one. You should have come with us when we went east to experience it."
The high priest answered with a sharp ripple,
"I have no need of any blessing from the Pale One."
The turns passed. It was now less than half a grate of turns until the blessing would be on the temple. As the time grew near, great crowds began to come into Bright's Heaven, in order to be in the temple at the time of the dedication. It seemed as if half of the empire thronged into the city. Finally, God's Chosen held a gathering outside the eastern orifice of the now completed temple. As the blessing of Bright came down upon them once again, God's Chosen announced that the next blessing would come upon the temple, and that in preparation for that turn, the next half-dozen turns were to be holy ones. All should stop their labor and prepare for the occasion by prayer. Then, at the appointed time, all should be inside the temple to receive the blessing. Time, 6:48 and 47 seconds GMT, Monday, 20 June, 2050. The science experiment's console screen blinked. East sector laser radar scan completed. North sector scan started. Caesar looked up at the words at the top of the screen and went on with his analysis of the IR scanner data. Time, 6:48 and 48 seconds, GMT, Monday, 20 June, 2050. 3 turns before the dedication of the Holy Temple, God's Chosen knew there was a problem. He had seen the pulsating multicolored beam go south, but then it had stopped. The time came near, and he looked in vain at the inner eye. He could see no beams, no light of any kind. "Bright is testing my faith," he said to himself. "For many greats of turns, the people have had to accept my word that the blessing of Bright was coming. Now I am as blind as they are. I must have faith." God's Chosen asked that the temple be cleared, and when the crowds and astrologers were all outside the orifices, he went in alone and climbed up on the inner eye mound to pray. God's Chosen looked out from the central mound across the empty inner court toward the outer walls in the distance. There was no doubt in his mind. This was what Bright had wanted. He turned his eyes to the sky, and looking south toward Bright, began to pray.
"O Bright, give me the faith that the others have, and if my belief falters, help me to overcome my weakness, so that I may believe in you and your blessing."
God's Chosen slowly moved down the inner mound and went out the western orifice toward the astrologer's compound. As he left, the troopers, who had been keeping the people out, finally let the crowds pour in, for the dedication was only a turn away. For fully half a turn, Chila poured through the orifices and gathered around the inner mound. Soon, the inner courtyard of the temple was full, with little groups gathered around outside each of the 12 entrances. Some climbed laboriously up to watch from the top of the walls when they found they could not get inside. As the time grew near, the high priest went to fetch God's Chosen, who had isolated himself in the old temple. As Bright's first approached the old temple area, he could hear God's Chosen in a whispered prayer to Bright, and even he was stirred by the